All right. Welcome back to the Common Man Podcast. Today's guest is Daryl Dittmer. How are you doing, Daryl?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. How are you, Lorenzo?
I'm doing great. I understand you have a great story. So let's just get started. Can you tell us where you're from and a little bit about your story?
Sure. I grew up in the Midwest, and I was the son of a my dad was a mechanic, and my mom was took care of the kids as a housewife. I had an older brother and a younger sister. So growing up in the Midwest when I did, which was a few years ago, you know, you grow up with the Protestant work ethic. That's kind of how it works. And, you know, my dad was also a Navy veteran. So he was a pretty disciplined guy. You know, my mom was pretty strict. So we grew up in a pretty strict household, you know, Lutheran education, that sort of thing. And that's how it all started for me, which was, you know, a great upbringing because I learned work ethic and I learned about discipline and manners and I learned about a lot of good things. You know, so I have no complaints when it comes to where I came from.
I understand you have your story as a overcoming addiction is what I've saw. Do you think having a strict household, you know, led you to wanting to venture out and have your own freedom at times?
It may have. Yeah, I don't discount that at all. You know, I think there was an element of, you know, wanting to escape to a certain extent and wanting to change things up, you know, and not sort of be under that yoke of discipline. So yeah, I would say that certainly could have contributed.
Yeah. I mean, relatable. I come from a Christian household and a single mother and very strict, didn't let us do a lot of things, you know, didn't even have us, couldn't get a girlfriend to had a job. So it was very, very, very strict. So I understand, you know, where you're coming from. And it's like, yeah, once I got my job and I got my car, wanted out of there as fast as I can and, you know, kind of do my own thing. So I definitely know where that's coming from. So what was childhood like? Like, what did you want to do? What did you want to become?
You know, that's a great thought because I had my veterinarian, firefighter, police officer sort of thing going on when I was real young. And my mom thought, and this tells you sort of where I came from, she wanted me to either be a pastor or a doctor. And I was not fit for either of those things. And as I moved on with my delinquency, I was certainly not fit at all for those things, you know, the more and longer it, that went on. So, you know, I would say for a long, long time, you know, childhood, you get those dreams and you get those, oh, you know, I'd love to do this or be this and sort of glorified things. And as I got older, I honestly had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no idea whatsoever. And I probably joked until I was 50 years old that I still didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And and I was a lot of things. So.
Yeah, I see you have a long list of resume, you know, of different skills and things you've done. What do you think you've learned over the years in doing those different things about yourself? And
you know, one thing I learned, and I think it's incredibly important, especially when you're young, and this is for people younger than me who might be searching for a direction. You don't have to go out and find your purpose when you're 20 years old or 18 years old or 25 years old. You know, for me, it was more of a figure out myself and figure out, you know, who I wanted to be and what I wanted to be and how I wanted to be with my life. And, you know, the purpose kind of shows up. So what did I learn? I learned so much about, you know, I went from farm boy to carpenter to a business guy. I was a sales guy. I've owned businesses. I've owned several, you know, ownership positions and other things and entrepreneurial, you know, type ventures and that sort of thing. And it's just been a whirlwind of things that I've been involved in. And what I learned is, and there's so much, but what I learned probably the most is you don't have to tie yourself to one thing. You know, my dad was a mechanic for 41 years for General Motors. And that's what he did. And, you know, he got a health care and pension and all that sort of thing. And that was great for those times. But I don't think you have to lock yourself into anything now, because things can change. We can change. Our opportunities can change. And I followed a lot of opportunities, and I still do. And I'm not done.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like that. And it looks like, you know, you look for those open doors, you know, those green lights that people give to you. They see a certain skill that you may possess, right? And then you're able, doing the many things that you do, it seems like you pick up quickly, learning new things.
I try, you know, I liked kind of figuring out my own adventures or ventures or whatever you want to call it. You know, the latest, being an author, which I didn't necessarily even know that was going to come to pass, but it did. And I was moved to do it at a certain point, and that was just the next thing. So what's after that? I have no idea.
yeah.
You just keep going, and cool doors open up, you know. Really, if I open my mind and I stay opportunistic, cool things can show up, and they do.
And I'd like to talk about that, about your book. It's called When I Stop Fighting, The Unexpected Joy of Getting My Head Out of My Ass. I love that title. So what got you inspired to write this book, and who is it for, and how'd you come up with that title?
Well, thank you for saying that you love the title. I guess I've been working on the book my entire life, because it's my story of my life, and told through all of the stories that make up my life, or I shouldn't say all of them, but a lot of the stories that make up my life. I had a mentor when I was 19 years old. I met him when I was 19, and he was in his mid-50s. And he said to me, as I was struggling through some problem or issue or, you know, whatever disaster I had piled up at that point in my life, and I had gotten sober by this point. So I'd gotten sober when I was 19 years old. And he said to me, his name was Bud, he said, "Daryl, when you stop fighting, the fighting stops." And that was the advent of an entirely new way of looking at the world for me. I used to look at the world as, you know, you got to struggle through, and you got to fight, and you got to, you know, wrestle, and you know, just no pain, no gain, all those sorts of things. And that worked to a certain extent. But the fact that I didn't have to fight my way through everything was a huge turning point for me in my life, because at that time I started looking for ways not to fight as opposed to fighting, and that helped a lot, and that's been going on my entire life. So that's why I titled the book in that way, is at least the first part of the title. And the second part of the title was just true story. I needed to get my head out of my ass, and that was very important for me to move forward in life and to be effective and to become, you know, useful to myself, but then useful to my family, useful to my friends, useful to my community, and useful to society. So that's the short story of how it got going.
And when you say when I stop fighting, is it more about accepting that things, you know, happen and you can't control everything in your life, or can you explain a little bit more on that?
It is that. It is accepting and being accepting of life. There's a chapter in the book called The Nouns, and basically what the chapter is about is that there are only three things I can't control, which are the nouns: people, places, and things, right? So I can't really control anything but myself. But, you know, the fighting is... it can be a number of things. And for me, it was first, it was drugs and alcohol, you know, and I was fighting that, but I was also fighting myself while I was fighting that, because that had to culminate in either me being all done or me, you know, coming to terms with I needed to change my life. So that was probably the biggest fight. But then, you know, when you embark upon a different life, I think it's very easy to, you know, to think, okay, I got this, or I shouldn't be doing this, or I shouldn't be feeling this, or I shouldn't be thinking this. You know, we're always fighting with ourselves. And sometimes the worst battle is when I feel something and then I tell myself I shouldn't be, or I'm thinking something and then I'm telling myself I shouldn't be, as opposed to allow things to come and to go and to pass and, you know, to not necessarily judge them. So there's an entire array of things that we fight ourselves about. But I think that's the crucial thing to understand, that the fight is with ourselves. It's, if we stop fighting with ourselves, we'll stop fighting with the world.
You know, for someone listening, that's like, that's so easy like to hear, but like, when does that switch, do you think, happens, like, in someone?
You know, I think probably the first thing is to become aware that that's what needs to happen, or that's what can work, or that's what can help start to change a person's life. You know, it's the awareness and the hearing it. I needed to hear that at a time when I was probably at one of my most vulnerable points. And so it clicked at that time and it made sense. But I don't think there are too many switches in this life. I think, you know, there's an old saying, it's a process and not an event. You know, the switch doesn't necessarily flip. It flips over the course of time. And, you know, I can change over the course of time, and I can become more aware over the course of time. And I work on those changes within myself as my awareness expands and it integrates into me over the course of time.
There's this quote that I found on your website, and I think it's surrounding your book as well. It says, I can be a victim of myself or a product of the work I do to become a better version of myself. I love that quote. And my question is, do you think we can tell others, you know, when they're exhibiting a victim mentality, or, you know, do they have to, you know, realize it themselves?
I love that quote too, actually. You know, I'm a big fan of not embracing the victim mentality for whatever reason. And, you know, there are certainly in this world, there are real victims of terrible things. You know, that's just the way the world goes, and that's just the way it is. But the victim mentality is a very different thing, I think, than being a victim. So, you know, there are, I don't know that I can ever change someone's path. I look at it as I can plant the seeds, and those seeds are going to sprout at some point, hopefully. And honestly, that's why I wrote my book, because I want to plant seeds for people, and I want something. You know, so many things in my life didn't resonate for years and sometimes decades. You know, it's just, and I'd hear it and I'd say, oh, wow, I don't do that anymore. Or, oh, now I know what that means. And everybody can think of examples like that. But,
right.
You know, I think the victim mentality is something where, you know, you have to surround yourself with people who don't think like that. And you surround yourself with people who don't think from that perspective. If you surround yourself with people who feel and think like that, then there's a very good chance that that's going to be really difficult to overcome.
That happened to me in my life, you know, is before I started this podcast, is just, you know, you think, woe is me, I came from this situation, this life, I don't make enough money, you know, I'm in this situation. A lot of the mistakes, you know, happen because you're the one that making the decision, right? So a lot of mistakes came from myself until I, you know, listened to a podcast where it spoke about the victim mentality, and like, really, you have the power to control and change your whole situation, your whole life, turn it around. And then I like the way you talk about surround yourself with the people that are going to, you know, lift you up. But I also feel like that people should also read the books that change people's lives and listen to those who have been there. And point in case why we're talking today is like, you've been there, you've done the work, and you're still doing the work. And I think that speaks to a lot of people. And can help a lot of people.
I sure hope so. You know, that's my intent in life now. I was speaking with someone yesterday, and I don't have a lot of things that I want or need, or, you know, things that I need to necessarily do. And that sounds weird, I know, but it's true. My path kind of lays out in front of me. and I may be busier than I've ever been. I, you know, sometimes I get in the office at 5 a.m. and I'm just doing stuff all day, you know, with, and I don't need to, you know, but I enjoy it and I love it. And the reason that I do it is because there's only so much time we have. And, you know, when you're young, it's easy to not necessarily think that way, but all of a sudden you're my age and you're like, oh man, you know, what am I going to do? And I would just say to anyone, you know, watching, listening, whatever, take the opportunities, take the chances, take the risks, you know, move yourself forward. And chances are one of the bigger things that can hold you back is a victim mentality or a blaming mentality, which I think go hand in hand. Like, oh, they're responsible for how I feel, or they're responsible for why I'm not getting anywhere, or whatever that is. And blame can be poison. So, wow. So if I take everything and I just wrap it within myself and I say, okay, I'm responsible for everything that goes on with me, and no matter what that is. So whether it's, you know, a bad circumstance that I need to get myself out of, or a situation that was painful that I need to move myself out of, or, you know, whatever it may be, I'm the one responsible. So with that mentality, you can go to the moon.
Yeah, I love that. So speaking of your story, I'm interested, you know, at the young age of 19, well, at what age did you figure out that you had a problem? And then what made you seek help? Did someone tell you something, or is it something that you decided on to do yourself?
I would say it was a joint effort. I was miserable. I was, you know, drinking, doing drugs, whatever, every day, you know, and not in a good place. And there was a time when I was very much considering I just may not want to be here anymore in terms of, you know, just how I felt. So, you know, my parents were, my dad was, you know, kind of like, okay, whatever, he'll figure it out sort of thing. And my mom was not thinking that way. And they suggested I go talk to a counselor. And I was at that point, my relationship with them had deteriorated, you know, almost immeasurably. But they wanted to, you know, just see if there was a way that somehow I could be snapped out of it. So it was up to me if I wanted to go see this counselor, and you know, they said, look, if you're going to go, meet us here at this place at this time, but we think you have a real problem. And I was not enthused. I was scared to death. I was not wanting to do it, but something in me made me do it. Something in me said, you know what, you need to do this, because if you go any further the other way, you may not come back. And that was the turning point for me. And when I met them, I decided to meet at this counselor's office, and I went in, I talked to this counselor, and the first thing he said was, don't BS me. Don't try to lie, you know, just because I'm going to know, and I'm just going to boot you out. And so don't do it. Let's just have a conversation. And I said, okay. And I was as honest with him as I could be. And that's when I was 18 years old, and about 3-4 weeks later, I was in a 30-day inpatient drug and alcohol treatment program.
How important do you think that turning point was in your life? And, you know, have you ever encountered anything like that, you know, in your career of like obstacles having to overcome?
That was probably the, you know, the interesting thing about sobriety and overcoming addictions, whatever the addiction is. It doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. It can be social media. It can be gambling. It can be a number of things. It can be attention. You know, people love those things, and people can get very attached to those things. So the issue is when I get rid of whatever that addiction is, then I have to deal with the real problem. And the real problem is me. You know, people say, oh, well, I have to heal my relationship with food or alcohol. No, you don't have to heal your relationship with food or alcohol or whatever. You have to heal your relationship with yourself. And then all your other relationships will heal as a consequence. So obstacles I have had, I don't even look at things as obstacles anymore. And I haven't for a long time. I look at it as this is part of the process that is going to get me where I'm going. So, you know, I'm not a goal setter, and I haven't been a goal setter for a long time. I'm more of an intention person, which basically means, and we can go as deep into this as you want, but I meditate every day and I do breathing exercises every day. And I do these for my body, my mind, my heart, and my soul. And when I'm doing the meditations, I drop intentions in, things that I intend to do with myself or my life. And that's probably the most powerful thing that I do in terms of moving toward, what I want to either achieve or do or become within myself. So yeah, there have been obstacles. There have been incredible hurdles. There have been all sorts of crazy things that have happened over the course of time. But they're not really obstacles. They're just stepping stones. The fact that they're painful and they don't feel good and they're not that fun doesn't mean I'm supposed to stop. It just means that's a place where I need to either redirect or climb the mountain or, you know, get to the other side, whatever it is, that's up to me.
Yeah. And, you know, so having an addictive personality, did you have to continue to work on things and keep yourself busy, or like, how did you stay disciplined and consistent for so long? I think it's almost been almost 40 years.
It has been almost 40 years. There is, you're right. There is an addictive, in my case, and not for everyone's case, but for me, an addictive personality. I can just eat up whatever I embark upon, and, you know, whatever that is. And I've had to watch myself for almost 40 years. I have to make sure that I'm not going overboard with things, and I've done it physically. I've had tons of surgeries because I don't know when to stop. I've had a lot of things happen that have sort of, because of the personality that I have. So, and that's part of the stopping fighting for me. You know, that's part of the slowing myself and tempering myself to a point where I'm not caving into that addictive personality. So I was addicted to drugs. I was addicted to alcohol. I was addicted to nicotine. And then, you know, over the course of time, and I'm not addicted to any of those things, and haven't been for a long time, but over the course of time, you know, I was crazed when it came to business, you know, when it came to sales, when it came to moving my life forward. And it's a continuous process of becoming better at balancing my life, balancing between work and, you know, more leisure time activities, or a lot of mind time and then, you know, slowing down my mind, or, you know, even if it's athletics or, you know, weight room or gym, I have to balance that with right. stretching or resting, or, you know, it becomes a lifelong journey of finding the middle road.
And if you had to teach someone like a little couple minute course on meditating, like how does someone get started and how impactful has it been?
There was a time when meditation was as important to me, and I should say it still is, but it felt as important to me as oxygen. Like just, it felt as important as breathing. So, there's so many books and there's so many different things that you can do, but honestly, the hardest part is being still, and the hardest part, and the other hardest part is fighting with myself, telling myself, oh, kick out these thoughts, stop thinking, don't think, you know, just, oh, I'm meditating. I can't be thinking. Why am I thinking? You know, so you're fighting with yourself, and that's part of the fight. So I would say the best thing to do when meditating is stop your body, sit, you know, whether it's cross-legged or in a chair, feet flat on the floor, whatever that is, and do your best for 5 minutes to just pay attention to your breath going in and your breath going out, and just do the best you can for 5 minutes. Don't judge it. If thoughts come through, they're supposed to, because that's what your brain does, is think, and it's okay. you know, don't judge yourself too harshly. And I think that's probably the one of the most important hurdles with meditating. And then as time goes on, you expand it, maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. And yeah. I do, between breathing and meditating, I do probably an hour a day at this point.
Yeah, I feel like, I find myself struggling with that the most is the thinking aspect. And when you said fighting with yourself, that it's so true. And it keeps coming around, right? The theme of, you know, quit fighting with yourself and just accept it and let the thoughts come in and go. And but yeah, I feel like it's difficult that some people, you know, myself included, don't like to try. But I feel like the theme is coming around of how important it is in your life, in your daily life, to quiet your mind and just sit still. And in a day where we have our phones at our fingertips and social media and all the notifications, it's increasingly hard.
It is. It's difficult. And I've gone through times with social media when I'll be looking at the phone for X number of, you know, whatever time per day. And I'm like, no, can't do that. So I set, and now I'm trying to, you know, increase my own social media presence and that sort of thing. But I also can't get caught in the trap, you know, and the trap is just having my notifications on all the time, which I don't. But, you know, so it's probably an hour a day and that's basically it. And nice. Whatever, if I get a great social media presence, great. If I don't, I'm not going to be married to my phone to try to do that, because I think that can be pretty destructive.
Right. So I also understand you have kids, but I don't know how many kids you have.
I have two boys.
And how old are they?
They're getting up there, 30 and almost 27.
Nice. My question leading up is, you know, what have you tried to instill that maybe you didn't have growing up, you know, in your childhood? And your book, I think, covers a lot of principles. And I saw on your website that, you know, it covers principles. But what principles do you hold near to you, closest to you?
Well, as far as what I try to instill in the boys, it really is principle oriented, and it goes into the same things, I guess, that are most important to me. But, you know, I think number one to me is honesty with myself, and you know, which is different than honesty with other people. Honesty with myself is something that is absolutely crucial for having a life where I can resonate within myself and with the world, because I know my place and I know where I'm at, and I'm not fooling myself. And I think that's probably one of the most crucial things. You know, faith is really important to me, and you know, that's not necessarily, that has nothing to do with any religion or denomination necessarily. It just has to do with, you know, getting to a point where you just know everything's okay. And yeah. People say, well, do you believe in God? And I say, well, yes, God and I have a great relationship,
right?
But it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, necessarily a religion. It has to do with my personal relationship. And that works for me. And in the final analysis, that's the answer, is what works, you know, what is actually working in my life and what is not working in my life. And that's, you know, even another principle that I tried to instill in the boys is, you know, you have to recognize when you're not happy and not content and not feeling good about life, and maybe make some changes, you know, and sometimes life just happens and it's difficult, and that's okay. It you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to make changes, but you know, if there's a thread of you know, just not feeling good about myself or my life, then changes need to be made. And one of the last points I'll make is on humility, but if you want to ask something before that, I'm certainly welcome it.
No, absolutely. I'd love to talk about humility, but I mean, as we kind of wrapping up here, I'd love to just ask this question is, you know, we have a lot of young listeners here that are looking for guidance or, you know, maybe you're lost. And, you know, what final advice, you know, could you bestow onto them, you know, if they're just looking for some advice in their life?
No, that's great. And that's the purpose of why I'm here. And that's the purpose of my book, is that I really want to plant those seeds that will help people. And, you know, even if it's 20, 30 years later, and maybe I'm not around and somebody picks up my book and it helps them, that's why I wrote it. So, you know, I think that a very crucial thing in this life is to not, you don't have to follow the crowd and you don't have to do what everybody else is doing. You know, there's a rarity, quite honestly, to people who live in such a way where they find that peace and they find that contentment. And it's not by doing what everybody else is doing. So, you know, I think it's really cool when I see a young person, and I've talked to many young people about sobriety and about addiction and overcoming addiction and that sort of thing. And it really is just so important to carve your own path, you know, in a positive way and in a way that supports your growth. But I'll just tell one little quick story about humility, and this will be something that'll work into, you know, what I want to leave with folks, especially younger folks. But there was a gentleman when I first got involved in I was in AA, a 12-step program. And so that was when I was 19 years old. I wasn't even old enough to drink, and I was in AA. And we would go to a meeting, and it was a Friday night meeting at the community center. And there was this older gentleman. He was probably in his 70s. And at that point, I had a few months of sobriety, and his name was Jimmy, and he probably had, almost 40 years of sobriety. So at that point in my life, I looked at him like, wow, this guy's like a deity, you know, like who has that long? And so he was just a beautiful human being. He was kind of slight of stature, not a big guy. And he was a little, you know, hunched over when he walked, and you can just kind of picture him. But he, you know, with all that sobriety, he was the only person at that meeting who would go and grab a pot of coffee and start filling people's coffee around the tables. And, you know, that showing of, you know, service and humility and just not thinking about himself was the most beautiful thing. But there was one thing that he used to say, and I thought it was, and I've carried it with me my entire life, you know, since that time. He used to say, you know, if you want to stay sober and you want to move forward in life and you want to grow and you want to change, one thing that you have to do is stay small. And really what that means is just stay humble. We don't have to think we know everything. Be open to learning, be teachable. And that, if you can do that and find people who are willing to teach you, or books that are willing to teach you, or podcasts that are willing to teach you, then learn. And that was one of the greatest lessons that I've ever received.
Wow. That's amazing. I love that. And now you're not quite at that age yet, but you have almost the same amount of sobriety years. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
And thank you, you know, for all the knowledge you passed on. I appreciate it. If anyone is interested, please pick up Daryl's book at daryldittmer.com or on Amazon. You can find his book, When I Stop Fighting, The Unexpected Joy of Getting My Head Out of My Ass. And I love that. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I appreciate you, Daryl.
Thank you, Lorenzo. I appreciate you too. And we'll talk again. I really appreciate your time. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.